They could have changed the markings, wiped the memory core. Is there any other way we can prove it? Just get me inside the cockpit. Hans made some modifications to the ship nobody else would know about.
When Duhl returned, Lando said, My assistant wants to be sure you've been doing thorough maintenance on these ships. If you're not taking care of them, they don't make much of a defensive fleet. Let's take a look inside one at random. Say, that Corellian ship over there. Duhl seemed taken by surprise, glancing at the Falcon.
That one? We have plenty of top-notch fighters you can check out. That one is something of a piece of junk.
Lando waggled his finger. If you choose the ship for us, Maruth, that contradicts the whole point of a random inspection, doesn't it? Open this one up. Go on. Reluctantly, Duhl worked the external controls that dropped the Falcon's ramp. Lando took the lead, followed by Luke, while R2 puttered so closely behind Duhl that he nearly ran over the Rybat's heels. Inside, Lando strode to the cockpit, ostensibly to check out the systems. Running his fingers lovingly over the stained, worn surfaces, he flicked a few switches. Ion flux stabilizer checks out as optimal. So does the stasis field generator. Should we go back and check out the power converter? Those things are notorious for breaking down in Corellian freighters. Lando backed down the narrow corridor leading from the cockpit to the central living section of the ship. Turning left toward the entry ramp, he stepped carefully on the main deck plates. From the control panels, he had unlatched the hidden locks, and when he stomped on the appropriate plates with his boot heel, they popped up, revealing the 7 secret compartments Han had personally installed as spice-smuggling bins beneath the floor.
Caught you, Duhl, you bastard! Lando grabbed him by the yellow cravat at his throat. What have you done with Han and Chewbacca?
Duhl seemed completely astonished, flailing his splayed hands in the air.
What are you talking about? He croaked.
As Lando glared down into the Rybat's huge eyes, Duhl slipped one of his hands into his waistcoat and yanked free a small holdout blaster pistol.
Luke saw it and reacted instantly, shoving with his mind and using the force to hurl Maruth Duhl away from Lando. The blaster went off, sending a deadly beam ricocheting around the Falcon's corridor. Duhl fell backward, then scrambled to his feet. He fired at them again, but his mechanical eye had no time to focus, and the beam went wide. Duhl dove down the ramp, bellowing for the guards. His mechanical eye fell off, clanging and rolling across the floor. He scrambled after it in a panic, feeling blindly with his hands.
Luke smacked the door controls, raising the ramp and sealing the hatch.
We should have kept him as a hostage, he said. Now it's going to be a lot more difficult to get out of here.
Outside, Duhl raised the alarm. Guards scrambled through the parked ships, drawing blasters, fastening their armor.
R2, get to the computer, Luke said.
Lando jumped into the chair behind the controls.
I doubt we can do anything for Han anymore. We need to get back and tell Leia. She can bring a full-scale occupation force to Kessel. We'll go over this place with a high-res scanner.
If we get out of here alive, Luke said.
R2, Lando called. Jack into the co-pilot's computer and tie into the hangar controls.
The astromech droid chittered his willingness to help and rolled toward the Navicomp console. Outside in the hangar, security horns sounded. People ran around every which direction, not knowing where to go. Luke saw immediately that these mercenaries had far less experience working together than the sloppiest Imperial regiment. But the moment Lando lifted the ship off the landing pad floor, everyone had an unmistakable target.
R2, get that door field down, Lando shouted.
Using maneuvering thrusters, he edged the ship forward, picking up speed as they rose over the other parked fighters. Pilots scrambled into their ships, ready for a space battle. In orbit around the moon, the capital ships did not yet seem aware of the situation. Lando accelerated toward the wide hangar opening to space. They could not see the invisible shield. R2 bleeped and whistled, but the sounds were not positive.
Get the shield down, Lando insisted.
R2's interface jack whirred as he worked with the hangar bay's computer, trying to skirt the password controls.
We need the shield down now, R2, Luke said.
The Falcon's rear thrusters kicked in, and they lurched forward, gaining speed.
Come on, Lando said to the ship. You can do it. Do it one last time for Han.
R2 bleeped in triumph a moment before they shot through the opening. Luke flinched, but the shield dropped just in time. Alert lights began to wink on in the big battleships riding in orbit. Weapon systems warmed up, targeting modules locked on to aim points. The Millennium Falcon soared into open space as behind them the Kessel forces scrambled in pursuit.
23.
Hunched in his dark robes, Tal Sivron came to visit Kwai Zoox in her research room. He drew a long, hissing breath, and his head tails twitched with uneasiness as he stared at her setup. The Twi'lek administrator gave the impression of never having set foot inside an actual laboratory before, which seemed odd to Kwai, since he was in charge of the entire installation. Kwai stopped her musical calculation with an atonal squawk.
"Director Sivron, what can I do for you?"
Tal Sivron demanded regular written reports, feasibility studies, and progress summaries. He hosted a weekly meeting among the scientists to share their ideas and their work in a frank and stimulating exchange. But Tal Sivron did not make a habit of visiting. He shuffled around the room, poking at things, kneading his knuckles, and looking at the standard equipment as if deeply interested. He brushed his clawed fingertips over the calibration gauge of a weld stress analyzer, muttering,
good work, as if Kwai herself had invented the common instrument. I just came to commend you for your consistently fine efforts, Dr. Zoox.
Sivron stroked one of the vermiform head tails draped around his neck. Then his voice grew stern.
But I hope you are about finished with your endless iterations on the Sun Crusher project. We're past Grand Moff Tarkin's target date, you know, and we must move soon. I insist you write your final report and get all the documentation in order. Submit it to my office as soon as possible.
Kwai blinked at him in annoyance. She had submitted 5 separate final reports already, but each time Sivron had asked her to rerun a particular simulation or to retest the structural welds in the Sun Crusher's quantum armor. He never gave any reasons, and Kwai got the impression that he never read the reports anyway. If it had been up to her, the Sun Crusher would have been ready for deployment 2 years ago. She was getting bored with it, wanting to move on to a new design she could start from scratch and get back to the enjoyable, imaginative work again.
You'll have the report by this evening, Director Sivron.
She would just send a repeat of the last one.
Good, good, Sivron said, stroking his head tail again. I just wanted to make sure everything is in order.
For what?
Kwai thought. We're not going anywhere. She hated it when the administrators and the military types kept sticking their noses in her work. Without another word, Tal Sivron left. Kwai stared after him, then activated the rarely used privacy lock on her door. Returning to her imaging terminal, she continued trying to crack the wall of passwords in front of her. She did like challenges, after all. Kwai could not stop thinking about what Han Solo had told her. At first it was a new puzzle to solve, but then she finally began paying attention. To her, all the prototypes she developed were abstract concepts turned into reality through mathematical music and brilliant intuitions. She kept telling herself that she did not know or care what her inventions were used for. She could certainly guess, but she tried not to. She didn't want to know. She blocked those thoughts before they could surface. But Kwai Zoox wasn't stupid. The Death Star was supposed to be used to break apart depleted dead planets to provide access to raw materials deep in the core. Right. Had she thought up that excuse afterward? The World Devastators were supposed to be immense wandering factories, taking useless rubble and fabricating scores of valuable industrial components. Right. Tarkin had been with her during the immense pressure of her original training. She knew what the man was capable of. And the new Sun Crusher was... what? Han had said, raising his voice so that it hurt her fragile ears, "What in all the galaxy could the Sun Crusher be used for other than to completely wipe out all life in systems the Imperials don't like? You don't even have a bogus excuse like rubble mining. The Sun Crusher has one purpose only, to bring death to countless innocent people, nothing more." But Kwai could not possibly have the responsibility for lives on her hands. That wasn't part of her job. She just drew up blueprints, toyed with designs, solved equations. It exhilarated her to discover something previously considered impossible. On the other hand, she was perfectly aware of what she was doing, though feigned naivete provided such a nice excuse, such a perfect shield against her own conscience. In the Maud databanks, Kwai had discovered the complete debriefing of Han Solo, protected by a password she had easily broken. Full video instead of just a transcription. Sivron and Dalla had indeed kept much of it from her.
But why?
As Kwai watched the entire torture session, she could not believe her eyes.
She had never suspected the information had been taken from him in that manner. The words on paper seemed so cool and cooperative. But on a deeper professional level, she was outraged at Admiral Dalla. Access to data was supposedly open to all Maw scientists. She had never been denied a single information request in 12 years inside the black hole cluster. But this was even worse. She hadn't just been denied access to the full report. She had been deceived into thinking Han's debriefing held no more data.
But information is meant to be shared, Kwai thought. How can I do my work if I don't have the pertinent data?
Kwai had little trouble breaking through the various passwords. Apparently, no one had expected her to bother looking. She read the full report with sickened astonishment. The destruction of Alderaan, the attack on Yavin 4, the ambush of the rebel fleet over Endor, the huge hospital ship and personnel carriers blown into micrometeoroids by the second Death Star's superlaser.
What did you think they were going to be used for? Han had said.
Kwai closed her eyes to the thought.
Focus on the problem.
It had been a mantra of her childhood. Be distracted by nothing else. Solving the problem was the only important thing. Solving the problem meant survival itself. As a child, she remembered spending 2 years in the sterile, silent environment of the orbital education sphere above her homeworld of Amwat. Kwai had been 10 standard years old, the same age as her other 9 companions, each selected from different Amwati honeycomb settlements. From orbit, the orange and green continents looked surreal, blurred by clouds and dimpled with canyons, blemished by upthrust mountains, nothing like the clean maps she had seen before. But beside Kwai's educational sphere orbited Moff Tarkin's personal Star Destroyer. It had been a mere Victory-class ship, but powerful enough to rain death and ruin down on Amwat if the students should fail. For 2 years, life for Kwai had been an endless succession of training, testing, training, testing, with no other purpose than to cram the total knowledge of engineering disciplines into pliable young Amwati minds, or to burst their brains in the process. Tarkin's research had shown that Amwati children were capable of amazing mental feats, if pushed properly and sufficiently. Most of the young minds would collapse under the pressure, but some emerged like precious jewels, brilliant and creative. Moff Tarkin had wanted to test that possibility. The gaunt, steel-hard man had stood in his dress uniform during important examinations, staring at the surviving Amwati children as they wrestled with problems that had stymied the Empire's best designers. Kwai remembered how alarmed they had been when one of her classmates, a young male named Pillock, suddenly fell to the floor in some kind of seizure, grasping his head and screaming. He managed to climb to his knees, weeping, before the guards grabbed him. He still grasped for his examination paper as they hauled him away, yelling that he wanted to finish his work. In silence, Kwai and her 3 surviving classmates went to the window of the educational sphere so they could watch as turbo lasers from the Victory-class Star Destroyer obliterated Pillock's honeycomb settlement in punishment for his failure. Kwai could not be distracted by consequences. If her concentration faltered, everyone would die. She had to lock away all caring. Problems were pure and safe, to be solved for their own sake. She could not allow herself to think beyond the abstract challenge at hand. In the end, Kwai had been the only one of her group who made it through the training. She received no instruction in biological sciences, saving her memory space for more physics, mathematics, and engineering. Tarkin had whisked her off to the new Maw installation and placed her under the tutelage of the great engineer Bevel Lemelisk. Kwai had been in the Maw ever since. Problems had to be solved for their own sake. If she allowed herself to be distracted by feelings, terrible things would happen. She remembered images of burning Amwati cities winking like faraway campfires from orbit, the laser-ignited wildfires that swept across the savannas of her world. But she had too many calculations to finish, too many designs to modify. Kwai had salved her conscience by laying the responsibility on others. But the truth was, she created devices that had directly caused the deaths of entire civilizations, the destruction of whole worlds. With the Sun Crusher, she could wipe out solar systems with the push of a button. Kwai Zooks had a lot of thinking to do, but she didn't know how to go about this kind of pondering. This was an entirely new and different type of problem to solve.
Chewbacca stood like a statue, refusing to move and daring the keeper to use his power lash again. The keeper did. Chewbacca roared at the pain lancing across his skin. His nerves writhed in the aftermath of the charge. He raised his hairy arms, seething with the desire to rip the fat, placid man's limbs from his spherical torso. 14 stormtroopers leveled their blasters at him.
Are you going back to work, Wookiee, or do I have to nudge the power setting up a couple more notches?
The keeper tapped the handle of the power lash against his palm, gazing at Chewbacca with a bland expression. His complexion was dusty-looking and bloodless, as if no hint of life had ever passed beneath the skin.
Any other time I might have enjoyed the challenge of breaking you, Wookiee. I've been here 14 standard years with an entire crew of Wookiee slaves. We lost a few during the process, but I cracked them all, and now they follow orders and do their work. But Admiral Dalla insists that everything be in top-notch condition for mobilization by tomorrow.
He flicked the sizzling green tip of the lash in the air in front of Chewbacca's face, singeing some of the fur. Chewbacca peeled back his black lips and growled.
I don't have time to play games right now, the keeper said. If I have to waste any more time disciplining you, I'm going to dump you out into space. Do you understand?
Chewbacca considered roaring in his face, but the keeper looked serious. At the very least, Chewbacca had to survive long enough to find out what had happened to Han. A long time ago, Han had rescued Chewbacca from other enslavers, and he still owed the man a life debt. He gave a low grunt of acquiescence.
Good. Now get back to that assault shuttle.
Chewbacca wore gray work coveralls with pockets to hold engine diagnostic tools and hydrospanners. None of the tools could be used as a weapon. Chewbacca had already checked that much out. The Gamma-class assault shuttle took up a good portion of the Gorgon's lower hangar bay. Chewbacca had a small data board listing the configurations for the tractor beam projector and the deflector shield generators. He had worked on other ships before, and he knew the Falcon inside out, thanks to the many on-the-spot repairs he and Han had been forced to make. With the specs on the data board, he could easily service decades-old Imperial technology. On the rear of the assault shuttle, Chewbacca checked the exhaust nozzles of the thrust reactors and grudgingly tested the blaster cannon mountings. In the front of the vessel, a convenient boarding hatch allowed access for the command crew, but Chewbacca opted for the more rigorous method of popping open and climbing through one of the foldaway launch doors used to disgorge zero-G stormtroopers during a space assault. Inside, he had access to the engineering level, where he tinkered with the power modulators and the life support systems. He restrained his urge to rip out circuits and damage the equipment.